What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 97, and as always, this episode is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and buy your stuff there, because that kicks some money back to us. Yeah, definitely do that, because we like doing the podcast, and it costs money, so help us out. With me today, as always, of course, is Bob. What's going on, Bob? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm just I just got done shooting a bunch of video for the YouTube channel, so
nice.
Pretty pumped about how it's turning out. It's actually getting good, or like, well, I'm learning to use the camera, so it's getting good.
Yeah, I like how this new camera purchase has kind of turned you into a bit of a camera nerd.
Yes. Well, the thing is like the one I had that was the years ago when I had bought that original one. That was the whole idea behind it. But then it just didn't happen. But with this one, I really want to shoot certain things, and I want things to look a certain way, you know. So I'm learning as I go. So it's cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had a compact mirrorless before. You're on a next level camera. That one was more of a point and shoot, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was like the now. Yeah. I mean, obviously, this one is. I would say that one was like mid. Consumer, this one's sort of like prosumer,
yes,
you would say, because it's not super, it's not like it's not an A7S II, you know, but it's like the A6300, the A6500 are like right in that, you know, $1,200 to $1,500 range.
Yeah, it's a smaller compact mirrorless. The funny thing is that a lot of pro photographers are actually switching to just shooting with the compact mirrorless, because they're making just as much money off the photos. So there's a big shift towards that. So the line between what a pro camera is and an amateur camera has blurred quite a bit. So
yeah, I think all the research I've been doing on this camera and learning things. I mean, a lot of people are shooting professional. You know, their business is shooting music videos or commercials, and they're using this camera to shoot those professional, you know, that companies are using, you know, so it definitely has that capability. As we were just talking about before we started recording, like you can shoot in S-Log 2, which is basically like shooting in RAW for video, so you have a lot that you can do with this.
Yeah. The only drawback, I would say, is that these ones, they all have a smaller sensor. They don't have that full frame sensor.
Yeah, they don't have the full frame. So the A7S II, which is that, has the full frame sensor.
Yeah.
But yeah, that when you get into that, that's, you know, I think it's like 2,500. I forget how much it is.
Are you talking about the A7R II?
I think it's the A7S II. Hold on.
The big guy, the top end compact mirrorless.
Yeah, it's the A7S II. No. It's a full frame. It's not a compact. Oh, it is mirrorless, but it's a full frame. You have a full frame sensor.
Yeah. Is there an A7S? Oh, there is. There's one of each. The big guy is the R2, though.
Oh, okay.
The top of the line. Yeah, so that one's probably 25. The main one, the R2, I believe, is 35, because that's been my dream camera for a while.
Yeah. But yeah, they're nice. I mean, Sony's making, I know a lot of people who were Canon guys,
yeah,
and now that they're doing a lot of video content, they've switched over to the Sony for the size, and that in that price range you can't find a good Canon camera that offers 4K video either.
No, you definitely can't. And really, to go to like a Leica or more of like a high-end compact mirrorless camera, especially with 4K video, is like, it is like $3,500.
Yeah.
So Sony is like crushing in the price to performance category. They actually, I saw this past week, they are the second highest like lens or camera body, I can't remember which one it was, seller between, you know, with the top three being Canon, Sony, and then Nikon now. So they actually jumped up a place.
Nice, nice.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well,
you want to do some computer tech?
Yeah, I know.
This is tech.
Yeah. But this is tech that's obviously going to help our YouTube, and just with the reviews, taking better photos and things like that. It's just I have to learn it. But we'll get into tech this week, and we have two really high-end products, I would consider high-end products, that I took a look at this week. The first is the ADATA XPG SX 8000, and that's a PCI Express M.2 solid-state drive. And this currently sits as their flagship M.2 SSD. Super fast. It offers speeds of 2400 megabytes a second read and 1000 megabytes a second write. So 2.4 gig and 1 gig.
That's pretty fast.
Very, very fast. When you, this is just like how it feels from moving from a normal hard drive when SSDs first came out.
Yeah.
And now when you move from a 2.5 inch SATA SSD and you move to an PCI Express M.2, just the speed difference is insane.
Yeah.
And the fact that these, the M.2 form factor just takes up no space. So if you're working in an ultra compact case, you really don't even need to, if you're doing like a small LAN rig or something and you get like a 1 terabyte one of these or whatever, you don't even need a drive bay.
Yeah.
You're pretty much good to go out of the box. Like it's really, really cool. This one is, I reviewed the 256 gigabyte version, but they offer it in sizes all the way up to 1 terabyte, I believe. And the drive is powered. I can't find the controller. it's a Silicon Motion SM2260. That is an 8-channel controller. That's pretty much one of the go-to controllers for third parties these days. A lot of companies are using it. It worked really well in our testing, although the drive kind of fluctuated in between tests. I'm not sure if that had to do as much with throttling, but I think it was just... the implementation on this drive, it just couldn't keep up with like the data rate.
The controller
itself. Yeah, it didn't seem, this drive also has it's 3D NAND, 3D MLC NAND that has TLC caching, and when you have that caching, if you don't have a high enough cache chip, if you're doing long sustained writes, the performance will drop off, and that happens in a lot of drives. So again, if you're doing log sustained writes, which a lot of people aren't, you're probably not going to look at this drive anyways. But if you're somebody who's playing games, or you're somebody who is just wants a really fast OS drive, this is perfect. I mean, this thing is going to fly. All your games are going to load up, like, click the mouse, boom, you're loaded up in there. I mean, it's really going to be that type of drive for you. And it's pretty affordable. The 256 gig, I believe, is $139, and I believe I think up from that is the 512, which is $199.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, so it's not bad for what you're going to get.
I need to be upgrading my situation here, I think.
Yeah. It's so crazy because, like, again, as we thought, like, SATA 3 SSDs are fast, and, like, that's such a fast boot up time. But then when you use them for a long time, and then you use something like this, like, even loading something like Premiere or Photoshop or Lightroom, like, it will just load instantly.
Yeah.
And then loading games is fast, and if you're playing a game that has, levels to load and things like that, like, it's just instant. It's so fast. And then using this for like a scratch disc for Premiere, it's awesome.
Yeah,
so if you can get your hands on one of these and it's in within your price range, I would definitely suggest it. If you're building a new PC, spend a little bit of more money and go with this over a typical SATA SSD. It's so worth it.
I just can't imagine that you would even save that much money by going with the 2.5.
You're not going to save a whole lot of money. And the performance is just so great that it's basically doubling the performance of a traditional SSD.
That's funny that we're saying that. But like $139 for a 256, like, that's really not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. And again, a 256 could easily be an OS drive, and then if you're running like a Z270 board that has two M.2 slots, even some Z170s have two.
Yeah.
And you can even get adapters. They make adapter cards that will go in your PCI Express slot where you can mount two of these on. Like, you can do a lot of different stuff with this.
Have a game drive and an OS drive.
Yeah. So I'm like so all for the PCI Express M.2 solid state drives. They're just awesome.
Yeah. Declutters everything too.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about it last week. Like, companies are making heat sinks for these, so you can do some cool stuff if you're looking to do some modding and things like that. So,
yeah, get a water block on there.
Yeah, get a water block. Keep it cool so it doesn't.
Oh yeah, throttle. No, that's right. We're supposed to actually make that.
That's our.
I forgot. See, I was not on my hustle this week.
Exactly.
I should have been.
I know. It should have been on what is it, GoFundMe or Kickstarter.
Kickstarter going. Yeah.
Yeah. you gotta get that going. So
hop on a cheap CAD site and get a quick diagram up and
there you go for it. Yeah. I think somebody has to make one at some point, right?
Oh, they certainly will.
Yeah.
I can't see EK not. It's just,
yeah, I think that the only thing I think with the size is, I mean, I guess the tubing size doesn't matter. I mean, like, you know, because I'm thinking it has to be super small tubing.
No.
But I think we'll see it.
Yeah, no, certainly. They're not that, it's not that small of an object.
True. Like,
they would, they would do Northbridge and Southbridge blocks.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Those are much smaller.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yep. We better see one soon. From Derek Enterprises.
Man, I don't think that name is going to cut it.
Yes. So, from there, I took a look at the Corsair Dominator Platinum DDR4 3200 16GB memory kits. Of course, we know Dominator Platinum as pretty much the highest-end drives that you can get. Or, not drives, highest-end memory that you can get. When people talk about building a super high-end system, Corsair Dominator is always mentioned and always listed, and it lives up to that name, Dominator. All of the ICs that are used on this memory are handpicked. The cooling solution that's on there is 100% custom, and the heat spreaders are the actual PCB is made to conduct heat to the heat spreaders.
Really?
So it's not just like a piece of metal that's thrown on there. It's all made in conjunction. It's called the DHX cooling system or DHX cooling technology, and it's all made to work together in one, you know, one whole package that does everything. Yeah. And that's why you're able to do such high overclocking with these. That's why you're able to, what I was able to achieve, this is a 3200 megahertz speed DDR4. I was able to get it to go all the way up to 3466.
Okay.
With no voltage increase in the exact same timings as the XMP profile. That's incredibly amazing if you think about DDR4 at 3200 megahertz. Getting it to go higher than that, all the other memory that I've been, the DDR4 that I've tested, to go higher than 3200 megahertz on its exact same XMP profile settings, the exact same timings, and the exact same voltage, I just could not do on any other kit.
No, I imagine that. And so I also presume that this was on an Intel system.
Yes, this was on an Intel system.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just speaks for itself, this memory. It is just awesome. It is, in my opinion, pretty much the best that I've tested, that I've had my hands on. It is the best DDR4 memory out there. So if you, again, if you're building a new system or you need to upgrade, and you want something that either you can run overclocked or that, you know, is just the best high performance memory out there, this is it. No question. And yeah, I'm glad I got to take a look at it, because it's just, you know, just
nice,
just a great
nice stuff. Yeah. Do you think you could have dropped the timings with the stock speed setting?
Probably. I didn't really, because of the timing of the review, I didn't get a chance to test that.
Yeah.
But I assume I could, just for the fact that I was able to overclock it.
200 megahertz.
Yeah, I was able to overclock it without changing anything. And typically when it comes to DDR4 over 3000 megahertz, like, that doesn't happen. So pretty pumped about that I was able to get that high. And this is just sexy looking memory as it is.
Oh yeah.
But you are going to probably pay a premium for it. I mean, this 16 gig kit is $172.99, so it's not cheap.
Yeah. But no memory is really cheap right now.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, but it's really good. And you know, it's backed by a lifetime warranty, so like you don't have to worry about anything, you know. You know, Corsair always does a great job with their warranty and all that. So really great stuff. Definitely if you're doing a new build, this is memory that I would highly suggest. So check out the review, and if you're building a new system, definitely consider this memory for sure.
Yeah, I think that just about every top of the line build, like when everybody goes like all out, they're like, I want the best build, you know, money's no object. Pretty much Corsair DOMs wind up on that.
Yes, you know, for sure. 100% for sure.
Yeah.
So going from super high end to really crappy, we're moving to our worst PC setups, which I forgot to post last week. I don't know why I forgot. But I forgot to post it, so we're like halfway through the month, but it was posted. So this is the article where we feature really bad PC setups, people who are moving or who just don't have a desk, can't afford a desk, or in some bad situation, or they're just horribly disgusting people who need to clean their house. This is where we feature 20 builds that kind of fall under this category. This past month wasn't horrible. I think I've seen worse. Yeah. But there are some that are really sad, like just really, really sad, you know, that they're working with this. But it's kind of cool to see people, you know, still get their PC up and running when they can, you know, or
yeah,
if...
I mean, you
if,
do what you gotta do, right?
If their laptop screen breaks, they get a normal monitor. Or if they don't have a desk, they kind of make a makeshift desk. It's actually, I always like doing the research for this article because it's always crazy to see what people get set up so they can either be on their computer, they can play games, you know, they can have their PC set up.
What's crazy is that a lot of these people are probably like super obsessed with, I kind of just figure like an MMO of some sort, maybe an RTS. So they're spending like serious time in these cramped, terrible setups.
Yeah, that is
all just to get some PC gaming in.
I had to do this a couple times, like in between moving, like I needed my PC set up, so I kind of like set it up really oddly. Yeah. And it was not fun for the time that I did do that, but no. But yeah, some of these are really funny.
One of these is horrible. My battle station during the winter of 2007, like, oh
yeah,
oh, what's going on? Where is this house that this person lives in?
Exactly. Oh, definitely check out this article. It's really, really cool to see some of these setups, and sometimes you just feel bad for these people. We should like start like a donation for some of these guys. But yeah, definitely check it out. We do it once a month, and we feature some of the worst builds, or not worst builds, worst setups that we can find. So they're really, some of them are really, really bad. So. But that brings us to Case Mod Friday, which is of course our weekly article where we feature a build or mod that's been completed. And this week we have a build called Snake and Dragon, and this is from George Poteca, I believe that's how you say his last name, and he's from Romania. And this one is done inside the Corsair Carbide Spec Alpha. And we've seen a lot of really good builds in this case, which I really like because it's a very inexpensive case. And he did the mod where he kind of cuts the case in half, sort of.
Diagonal.
Yeah, a lot of people have done that type of mod because this case kind of gives you that and allows you to do that. And it looks really cool, especially if you have a radiator in the front.
Right, yeah.
Because it kind of, the radiator sticks out, but the rest of the case isn't there. It's really, really cool. This is sort of MSI themed, white and black. And he's done something really cool with a graphics card, which I don't believe I've seen. He has the graphics card put in there vertically, but he has it on an angle, so it angles into the system. You kind of see that?
Yeah, he bent the back plate a little bit so that when he installed it into the bracket, it angles into the system.
Yeah, and it kind of angles, it's on the same angle as the actual cut, like the actual where the case is cut, which is pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I didn't notice that's the line he was following. I find though that I kind of don't think that this is one where you should have done it on the riser card. or with the riser card, because it blocks off so much of the interior of the case.
That's true. That's very, very true.
There's no, because the top of the case is cut away, there's no way to actually light this front portion very successfully.
Without making it very obvious, yes.
Yeah, so you kind of just wind up with this dead space.
Yeah. I do see that. That's a very good point.
But otherwise, it looks really nice.
Yeah, I like it. It's clean. It's not overly flashy.
I like the fans. Are they Bit Phoenix?
They're
Munson. No. Wait, hold on. What's it got? Oh, yeah, they're Bit Phoenix.
Yeah, they're Bit Phoenix. Yeah, they have the Bit Phoenix logo on there.
Yeah, they look good.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty cool. It's a pretty cool build, I like it because it's like on one side you have the snake, and the other side you have the MSI dragon. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm wondering where he got the snake theme idea from. Something personal, maybe.
I know MSI had some type of snake thing, or something like that, part of like their. I don't know. So maybe that's it, but I'm not sure.
Maybe
but...
the motherboard is like snake themed or something.
I don't believe so.
No?
No, but in any case, it is it's just a nice clean build and kind of unique with a tilted, or you guys, you want to call it angled or tilted graphics card in there. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
But we feature a new build every Friday. And we have entire sections, so you can go back for like at least 3 years, I would say, and check out all the builds in there. Get some inspiration and see what you can do if you decide to... You know, you want to get into the modding scene, you can kind of see what's possible out there, so it's pretty cool. And that brings us to our news this week, and not a whole lot of news. Most of it focuses around AMD's upcoming RX 500 series, which, again, that those are mostly going to be rebrands of the current 400 series. So nothing that special. The first thing is that the launch has been confirmed for April 18th. Which is in just a few days. So the so Power Color posts some stuff on their Facebook with a date, which is the 18th. So we assume that's when these cards will be officially announced and let out there. I also assume that out of the gate, you'll have all custom versions available, because that's what Power Color was teasing anyways. So you won't have, you know... stock versions or reference versions, then you have to wait for the custom ones to come out. They should be available at launch.
That's which nice to have all the options available.
Yeah, which makes sense because these technically really aren't new cards.
No.
You know what I mean? So it's easier for the add-in partners to make these new versions of these. Yeah.
Less changes, really.
Yes, for sure. So the performance and specifications of the cards have been leaked. It looks like somebody leaked the press deck or part of the press deck that came out.
Another accidental AMD press release.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, how did that happen?
One thing, we knew most of all the information that was in here. We have all the clock speeds and everything, so you can go in the article and see that. But one thing that we didn't know was that there was going to be a RX 560. This was not known. We knew there was going to be an RX 580, 570, and a 550. But the 560 was like nobody knew what that was going to be. So we do a 560. And they all fit in their, you know, in their segment that they're made to be. The 580 is sort of 1080p to 1440p kind of deal, you know, if you wanted to go there with decent settings. And then the 570 will be 1080p with average settings, and the 560 you could do 1080p, but it's mostly for
efficient 1080p games.
Yeah, efficient. It is mostly for MOBA games and some MMOs. And then the 550, they're really positioning the 550 to be a replacement that is better than onboard graphics. Yeah.
So that's kind of, you can play 4K movies off of it, and that's about it.
Yeah, and you could do some like Counter-Strike Source and some stuff at lower settings. These lower end cards are going to be great for like LAN centers and things like that, where you don't need the super high end performance, where a lot of people are playing esports titles that don't require all that. I think One other change that was brought out with this leaked deck is they're changing the cooler design on almost all the cards except for the lower end 550. So they're going with a dual fan design, which I think looks so much better than the typical one fan turbine. Yeah, blower. that sounds like it's going to take off type deal.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will help these cards be a little bit quieter too, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
Cooler, yeah. Perhaps. Yeah, so that will be the entire lineup again. Just
they're bumping the clocks up too.
Yeah, so you have a
probably do need. Yeah.
Yeah, do need a little bit better cooling. Yeah, they have all of their segments down and what they want to cover with this. Obviously, this doesn't excite us that much because it's not the high end. It's not the it's not Vega. It's not something that's meant right. for super high end gaming. So, but it does have its segment, and if you are kind of looking in the price range what these will be at, then I think that they could offer you something in that respect, sure. It just all depends what you're looking at and what type of games you're really going to be playing. That's kind of what it comes down to. So
I really think it just comes down to what your budget is.
Yeah, I think
just buys what they can afford.
Yeah,
as much as they can afford, essentially.
Yeah, that's kind of what it comes to all PC hardware. We want the best, but we can only afford what we can afford.
Yeah. We all want a Titan. Is it XP? Is that the new one?
That's the new one, yes, the XP.
Yeah, we all want a Titan XP. But nobody is going to buy one.
Yeah. Talking about NVIDIA. NVIDIA has actually beat AMD to market on HBM2. So their Tesla P100, which they announced last year, and it stands as the world's first HBM2 powered add-in card. It is officially available.
How did this happen? We've been talking about HBM2 for like a year now.
It's all about getting
and there's just been no yields.
There hasn't been great yields for it. I can't imagine even with this product that it's that stable. And cost. I mean, this thing is super expensive.
Yeah.
This is like
a $4,000 card?
Or something. I can't even imagine. I don't know the price offhand. But these are made for super high-end enterprise. Yeah, not even enterprise. Higher than enterprise. Like supercomputers. Yeah.
You could do it like a CAD shop would probably buy these. Doing design stuff.
Possibly, but this is even higher than that.
Is
you
it?
Know? Yeah. I think a Quadro card would be better than...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it would be much more cost-effective than these. But this is to do, like, artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Data
center accelerator.
But it's really interesting that NVIDIA has beat AMD to the market availability on this, because AMD, of course, is the company that pioneered HBM with their Fury line of graphics cards. Now, again, this is enterprise and super high-end. This is not consumer-based product, so it'll be interesting to see who has HBM2 in a consumer-grade product that's going to be available.
That's really the major key, if we're being honest.
Yeah. But I think it's an interesting story because, again, I don't know if AMD doesn't care about that segment but that's kind of like I don't know.
Yeah. Didn't they go, like, more power conscious and smaller form factor for this? Like, I remember we did an article, or we covered an article on AMD's professional line that they had re-released, the new releases, and it seemed like they weren't quite the powerhouses.
Yeah, this is even above what that is, right? Because those cards are meant to compete with Quadro. This is like, you're spending, I can't even imagine how much you're spending on this type of stuff. This is like
government grants and college stuff.
Yeah, this is like nuclear simulation testing, like all that type of stuff. That's what this is for. But NVIDIA's there first. We'll see who gets there first when it comes to consumer products.
That's really all I care about.
Yeah. Oh, you Derek has been wanting HBM2 for at least a year. Yeah.
I won't buy another graphics card until it has HBM2 on it.
I'll hold you to that. What if there's not a... Yeah. Yes. So, this past week, Ryzen 5 processor family was announced and is available. So, the Ryzen 5 is made up of 6-core and 2 4-core parts. So, to start off, you have the Ryzen 5 1600X at $249. The Ryzen 5 1600 at $219, the Ryzen 5 1500X at $189, and the Ryzen 5 1400 at $169. There are a ton of reviews for these out there, so you can scour the internet and find them out there and make your own judgment. But this is set to be the biggest price for performance kind of sweet spot when it comes to Ryzen. You know, starting at, you know, highest end one is $249.
Do you think it really is the best deal at $249? Because gaming wise, it didn't really pull ahead.
Yeah, see, that's the thing you have to consider.
And $249 is like, well, that looks cheap. It's not actually that cheap in this segment.
Yeah, I mean,
i5s, you know.
Yeah, what's the highest end i5 costs? Let's see,
7650. Is that what it is?
Yeah, or something. 7600.
Oh yeah, 7600.
7600 is $239, so.
Yeah, I'd probably buy a 7600, honestly.
Yeah. You know, so I think that, again, when it comes to Ryzen, at least in my opinion, it still needs, the platform still needs time to mature a lot.
Yeah.
And AMD.
You are getting a 6-core, 12-threaded processor, so if you're trying to do, like, well, I want a game, I want to say, you know, I got to save some money, I want a game, but I'm also doing, like graphics processing work and stuff, video work, this, you might have a good processor.
Yeah, you could. I mean, it again, it's crazy because, like, when we talk about this, like, the big letdown is the gaming performance. So I think when it comes to Ryzen, it's all depending on what you're doing, right?
Yeah,
and what you're going to be doing most of, like, say you only play games once a week, but, you know, you're doing hardcore video editing the entire other 6 days of the week, I think that Ryzen's a good option for that.
Yeah.
For sure.
I haven't seen anybody testing Ryzen for streaming, but I want to say, like, it's got to be better for streaming.
They did, AMD did the whole test where they had that running, and it beat Intel's parts, at least in the AMD test that they were showing.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I've seen it on any reviews, though.
Yeah. That's something really hard to test,
because it's kind of subjective.
Yeah. But yeah. So Ryzen 5's here. You can get into Ryzen system for $169. Ryzen 3 will be coming, I think, in a month or maybe 2 months. So if you're still not ready to jump on the gun for Ryzen, the Ryzen 3 will be coming out.
Which is that's a 4-core. 4-thread part, right?
Yes, I believe so. They're all are 4-core, 4-threads. So, yeah. So it's good stuff. But again, and we talked about it last week, it's good to have this whole lineup from AMD that's at least competitive to a point with Intel, right? Because if these were the old FX parts, we wouldn't even be talking about them, really.
You know? No, actually, we would definitely not be.
Yeah, so it's good to have the choice, and we've seen a lot more motherboards come out the past 2 weeks as well. So that you're having a lot of choice when it comes to building a new PC, and that's great. I mean, for consumers, for gamers, for anybody who's in the PC market, like, if I want to build a new system, like, I have a choice now. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
You know, and hopefully AMD brings that back to the graphics card segment as well. While you do have that choice, it's more one-sided, I feel.
One is still stronger right now. Yeah. But the nicest thing, and leading right into our next article, is that it's driving more innovation and faster, I mean, in this case, faster product release.
Yeah, so... Intel Skylake X and Kaby Lake X looks like they'll be announced at Computex, which kicks off on May 30th in Taipei. This is the next high-end desktop line from Intel. Strangely enough, they're launching both Skylake X and Kaby Lake X at the same time. And these will be the Kaby Lake X. What's really weird is Kaby Lake X will be, I believe there's only like 4-core processors, but the Skylake X will be 6 to 10 core. Of course, quad channel DDR4, 44 PCI Express lanes, which is like insane. you know, and Kaby Lake X will, yeah, they'll have 4-core dual channel memory and only 16 PCI Express lanes. So if you're looking to, if you're waiting for that next high-end desktop lineup, you know, this is going to be X299, I believe, will be the chipset for those, and a new socket as well, so LGA 2066, and this will be the next high-end line. So I'm pretty pumped for that. I love the super high-end desktop parts from Intel. Yeah. So basically what I think we'll have is we'll have an announcement at Computex, and then parts and motherboards and everything like that will be available probably a month later, maybe a few weeks later. Which means that at Computex, we should see a ton of X299 boards, which is always exciting. Yeah. So I'm pretty pumped for that.
Actually, that's probably the more exciting part.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
The boards are going to be, like, probably pretty cool.
The boards are probably one of my, like, I think motherboards in general are, like, one of my favorite pieces of PC hardware. Yeah. I get really excited about them. So.
Especially the high-end desktop boards. Because yeah, that's where, like, the stops get pulled out and you get everything,
right? Yeah, because they know people either are super hardcore gamers doing multi GPU setups, or they're a workstation board doing multi GPU rendering or encoding, or you know, it's just all over, like X99 boards. Yeah, they just, price is no option when it comes to that.
Yeah,
and things get a little crazy there. So that brings us to something else that is super high-end. Dell has finally started selling their UltraSharp UP3017Q. That is their 4K OLED display. This is something that I know you would love.
Yeah.
OLEDs haven't really caught on when it comes to desktop monitors. For the fact that... they're expensive, and they do have static image burn-in that does happen. So this new display is a 30-inch 4K display, which is sweet. Yes. A response time of 0.1 milliseconds at 60 hertz, which is basically, this is like the only panel that can do that.
Yeah.
Has great color reproduction and everything like that.
It's 100%. Adobe RGB, which is phenomenal.
Yeah. They say a 1,000,000-to-1 dynamic contrast ratio, which again is only achievable on OLED displays. It says that Dell implemented a special pixel shifting technology to try and fix or work with the image burn-in. So hopefully this doesn't have burn-in.
Yeah,
because I've
been try.
Yeah, the display is $3,500, which I mean it would look just so amazing. But I think my cutoff point for a display that I'm going to be using for editing videos and all that, you know, and photos, it's like $1,200. I think.
Yeah, you can get a lot for right around the 1,000 to 1,500 range. This is an editor's display. This is a photo editor, a video editor display. This is a professional display. And, UltraSharps in the past, they haven't even been, like, the highest end. They've been, you know, kind of like the workhorse part when it comes to photo editing, or image editing, I guess. But this looks like they're trying to make a play for that high end, because it's definitely priced up into the higher end segment.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to have this sitting in front of me. I would never pay the price for it.
It would look so, so good.
Yeah, I would never pay for it.
No. If somebody wanted to, like just give me one, I would not take it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is, man. I know they had this at CES. I didn't get a chance to see it. I don't know if you guys did.
No, I don't think we did.
Yeah, but I would love to actually see what this looks like. Because I remember we saw the Quantum Dot displays from Samsung, and those were just great to just look at and see the difference. But I think seeing this in 4K and having 4K playback and
Yeah, it's known that OLED is better than Quantum Dot. Like that's
And it's brighter too.
Yeah. Adobe 100% RGB. That's freaking sweet.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Has a lot of color.
Yeah. So
and then you know, OLED at 4K, you have very good color separation too. So.
Yeah. So Dell, if you want to send Derek and I one of those, we will send you our address.
Yeah. We'll I'll give you a good review.
we need two each.
Yeah, two each. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'd do with the real estate.
Yeah. So that brings us to our last story, which we had talked about in the past, but it looks like it's finally being implemented, is that Microsoft is blocking updates on if you have a system with either a Kaby Lake or a Ryzen processor and you have Windows 7 or 8.1, you will no longer be able to update.
Dumb.
Lame. Which is makes sense. I know they both AMD and Intel ink some type of deal with Microsoft to make this happen. And it also has a lot to do with processor compatibility, a lot of different things, obviously.
No, mostly just to do with the money.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with Microsoft wanting more people to be on Windows 10 because that's what it's going to be going forward. Obviously, for them to make these type of deals with both AMD and Intel makes sense for Microsoft. So if you try to get the latest April update, you'll get and you're running Windows 7 or 8.1 and you're on a Ryzen or a Kaby Lake system, you'll get a message that says your PC uses a processor that is designed for the latest version of Windows. Because a processor is not supported together with the Windows version that you're currently using, your system will miss important security updates.
Dumb.
Yeah. So, again, we knew this was happening. We knew, it had been talked about. They addressed it and said, this is what we're going to do. So they gave far people, and I believe they gave the notice before when you could still get Windows 10 for free, maybe. I'm not sure.
No.
It might have been after that, because that had been gone for a while. I don't know if you can still do that trick where you can still get Windows 10 for free with the...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But, yeah. But in any case, in my opinion, if you have a new system, because you have... You know, Kaby Lake just came out. So did Ryzen. If you're building a new system, there's no reason you should be building it on 8.1, especially 8.1. Yeah. 7 can make...
That's not what I'm arguing for. Yeah, 7 is a solid platform.
Yeah, 7 is a solid platform, but it is pretty old these days. Yeah. So,
question though. Does this block off all updates? Like, you cannot update it from a fresh install? Or just new updates?
New updates.
Okay.
I believe so.
Because if you can't update it at all, that's... like incredibly lame.
No, I think it's just new updates, like from a certain point going forward.
They're just not making more. I get like, which isn't, if that's what it is, that's not like totally unacceptable. I suppose they don't want to continue to put money into it. But this, I don't know. Microsoft being sketchy.
Yeah, that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
But again, in my opinion, if you're building a new system, you should be on Windows 10 for the most part. Yeah.
Nah.
Derek is such a stickler for Windows 7.
Windows 7 is a superior platform.
It is a good platform. But I mean, you can't, you know, there's no DX12.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, certain things. But in any case, you'll run into that problem if that's what you're doing. And that is our news for this week. So not a whole lot of news, but definitely some stuff going on. Bless you.
Excuse me.
And, you know, coming up to, you know, end of, you know, getting closer to Computex, man. Computex is such a good time because we have so much good hardware that gets announced at the show. So I'm getting excited for that. But coming next week, I have, which I was supposed to get done this week, but I wanted to launch the video the same time I did the review. So the Autonomous Smart Desk 2, that is the adjustable standing, sitting desk that is pretty awesome in my opinion. And I've been using it for a good 3 weeks, a month now, and I'm absolutely in love with it. So definitely stay tuned for that review. And I'll also be taking a look at the MSI Z270 SLI Plus motherboard. A great Z270 board from MSI. I think this is our first Z270 board from MSI. So extremely affordable too. So their Plus line is pretty affordable, kind of like doesn't have all the extra stuff you don't need, like RGBs and a lot of other junk that's just kind of thrown on boards to make them expensive. So this board's like
junk, let's just say the flashy stuff.
Yeah, so this board is like $139, which is very affordable. And it has everything you need. USB 3.1, you know, you have your M.2 slots, you have support for two-way graphics, like you know you have everything that you would need to get on the Z270 platform. So
at that price range, is it like stable, super stable for overclocking, I guess, is questions I would have.
Yeah, well, once is it, is it a stable board? You'll see in my review.
Yeah.
You know? But that's the whole idea behind this line from MSI, is to make it affordable for people and to cut down on the things that you a lot of times you just don't need. So we'll see how it goes. I'll definitely stay tuned for that review, because I will have that for you next week. And I might have some other stuff. It all depends on what all gets done over the next few days. So we'll see. But definitely cool. Some cool stuff coming up, cool videos coming up, and all of that. And we're putting all of our podcasts on YouTube now too. So you can, if you're a big YouTuber, you can easily find our podcasts, and you can listen to them right on there instead of your normal podcasting software if you want. So options. Lots of options. Yeah, so we're giving you even more options. So that is brings us to the end of the podcast. We always talk about if we did anything interesting this week. Did you do anything interesting?
House stuff.
Did you go see Fast and Furious?
Oh.
No?
No. That's not something I'll go see in theaters.
Oh. No. Okay. All
that's
of our...
these were good-ish. Mostly,
yeah.
Kinda.
I mean, I'm a huge.
I'll wait to see it on video.
I might go see it Monday. I'm not sure. We'll see. I flew my first drone this week.
Did you?
Yeah, there was
Did
actually.
Did you get in some sort of a deal where like you owned it with somebody else and you finally got it this week?
See, nobody's gonna get that joke except for me and you, because our one friend. Long story short, our one friend wanted to buy a drone, and they're rather expensive. So he wanted to go in with like four people. And, like, these are people who, like, live across the country. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll get it for a few months, and you get it for a few months. And we're like, dude, that makes no sense. My good friend, Brian, he's actually in town for a couple weeks, and he's, like, a travel vlogger. And he got the DJI Mavic. Mm-hmm. And that thing is tiny. Like, I've seen, like, videos of people use it, whatever. But, like, until you – it is so small. But the picture that it – you know, that it shoots. Yeah. It shoots in 4K. It's so small. It's so easy to use. Like, I was able to use it, no problem. Nice. And but it is kind of scary because it's like a $1,200 drone, and like you have $1,200 in the air, and then when you fly it, you can fly it pretty far, and like, oh, there's $1,200 just flying away.
And, like, all sorts of stuff can really kind of go wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can obviously crash it into things. You can, you know, there's been times when like birds will hit it, or you know, knock it out of the air. There's times where like you lose connection to the remote, so like you can't, you know, just stuck up there. Like there's a lot of things that I know a lot of people that have destroyed drones, but I flew it for a good like 3 or 4 hours
really?
Within the past couple, yeah, like 2 days of flying it, and I'm really good with it. It's really actually really easy to use, really responsive, and it's a good piece of hardware, and I might actually, you know, I might get one. really cool stuff. It's just like the footage that you can get is just like, you know, you're not gonna get that perspective anywhere else, you know.
Yeah, like you could probably shoot weddings or something with it.
you could shoot, I mean, you could shoot a ton of stuff with it. Weddings, you know, anything that's going on in your area, like your bike races, you know, you can set it to follow you. You can do a lot of cool stuff with it.
Yeah.
So that was my exciting thing this week. So,
cool.
Might have to be making another purchase. Who knows? You know, so, again, guys, that is the end of the podcast. So, as I always say, we have a full show notes page. So everything that we talked about, you can click through and get all of the details that we didn't get or read more or find out more. And it's Think Computers, all one word, on your favorite podcasting software, on YouTube, anywhere you can find us, just Think Computers, all one word, and you'll find the podcast. So until next week, catch you guys later.